If you like to head outdoors to clear your head, you probably already know summer can be a terrific time to hike. With kids off school, people taking time off work, and the daylight lasting longer. But summer can also be the hottest time of year to explore the outdoors, as today is illustrating so well. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today we're going to talk about hiking for the full hour. We'll discuss how to stay safe in the heat and get tips for the best trails in the tri-state to explore. Joining me now are Footpaths blogger Patrick Burns. Welcome back, Patrick.
Thank you.
Indiana Department of Natural Resources Trails Manager Alan Hurst. Thanks for being here, Alan.
Thank you for having me.
And Ohio Department of Natural Resources Statewide Trails Administrator Mark Allen. Welcome back, Mark.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thank you all so much for being here. So, Alan, is it ever just too hot to hike? Do you ever just look at the thermostat and say, or thermometer and say, nope, not doing it today?
Yes, it certainly can get a little, I'd say, too hot to be comfortable hiking. If you plan well enough and have enough water, you can certainly do it. But when you start getting to heat indexes of 106, it may be a good day to enjoy the AC. But that depends on the person. Some people will still get out there and get some exercise and enjoy the sun.
Yeah. Patrick, how do you stay safe while you're hiking in the summer? And are there particular precautions that you should take if you've got kids with you or older adults who might be more vulnerable?
From a heat point of view, I think it's just a matter of probably starting earlier in the day or late in the evening. We'll really take the index down quite a bit and make it more tolerable and safe. But as he said earlier, just packing enough water. And I think it's funny because I'm sort of guilty of this. I'll have water with me, but I'll never take the time and actually sit down and drink some. So you have to plan it all out to keep everybody hydrated.
Sure. It's not, you're just making more weight for yourself to carry if you're not drinking it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Mark, that leads me to ask, how much water do you think people should be bringing with them for a hike?
I think there are some really good points that were already brought up. I generally try to have at least a liter of water for each hour that I'm out, plan to be out. But I also like to have some electrolytes in that water as well to make sure that I'm not getting any cramps or anything like that from excessive sweat loss. I also think it's important to make sure that you're planning what kind of clothing you're wearing. Lightweight clothing that is breathable, and also planning to hike in the shade possibly instead of maybe in the prairie. Being in the canopy of a forest would definitely be more comfortable when the sun is shining and keeping you cool along those hikes.
That makes sense. We're talking about hiking for the full hour today. If you have questions about hiking or if you have comments about the trails you like best, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We already got a call from Johnny. He did have a question about pH balanced water. He's wondering, is alkaline water better for hydration? He's looking that up, and it looks like that's the case, but he wonders if any of our guests have any experience with that. Patrick, do you?
I do not, even as a physician. I don't usually differentiate from that. Our kidneys are very sophisticated, and they usually can tune things up pretty quickly.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's handy. You're a retired physician, so yes. That's a handy resource for the show. What about you, Mark or Alan? Do either of you pay attention to whether there's a pH-balanced water that hydrates you better?
No, I typically trust the water out of my tap, and that's what I kind of go with.
Yeah.
And same here. pH balance has never been something I kept an active eye on.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, there's your answer, Johnny. We've got three people. What about alkaline water that has high pH levels? Could that be a problem for your kidneys, Patrick?
I would just be shooting in the dark in a sense, but I think if you maybe just drank too much too quickly, it might not give the kidneys a chance to balance it out again. Mm-hmm. I'm just shooting in the dark, but I know we see water toxicity from people who do consume too much water too fast. And so I could see that might be a problem.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Johnny, I hope that helps. Thanks for calling. Again, if any of you have questions about hiking, give us a call, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Mark, what are your favorite places to hike when it is hot and sunny? I think you were talking about tree canopy and the forests rather than the prairie and those open places. Is it noticeably cooler when you've got a lot of trees when you choose to hike there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we had an AmeriCorps group that was working on a new trail project up at Stone Lake State Park. And the beauty of this trail is called the Blue Heron Trail. And it's a 2-mile trail on the north side of the lake. So you get beautiful views of the water, but also the cooling breeze that sometimes is associated with staying in a wooded area near a body of water.
Mm. Alan, do you have favorites in Indiana?
I have quite a few favorites, kind of zeroing in to the Cincinnati region. There's a lot of good options that are within a reasonable driving distance. Particularly, Brookville Lake has over 52 miles and 16 hiking trails that have varying levels of difficulty or distances. A nice easy one that I really enjoy is the Glidewell Trail. There's a shorter, 2.5 mile or a longer 4 mile loop, but it's a great trail, and it passes by a 2,000-year-old Native American mound.
Hmm. Patrick, have you been to any of those?
I have not been to Brookville. No, I have not.
Yeah. What are your favorites in around here? And I'm going to lean on you for Kentucky, but just generally, too, because you hike all over the place around here.
Yeah. This time of year, I'm a prairie guy. And one of the unique features of our prairie, if we go back to our childhood and think of what we thought prairies were, this massive, endless grassland. Well, the prairies in the Ohio River Valley, Adams County, Ohio, for example, the prairies are smaller, and the trails frequently then take you into a woods for a while, and then you go on, and then you go out the other side to another prairie pocket. So you get this. You might get some sunshine, then you get into a deciduous wood, and it goes on like that. And there's several of those. Lynx Prairie, which is part of the Edge of Appalachia group. Plum Creek Run Prairie, which is part of Arc of Appalachia. And in Kentucky, there's one called Crooked Creek Preserve. It's one of the state nature preserves that's over near Maysville. Excellent. Mm. Hiking all those.
Yeah, so even when it's hot, you're okay with a little prairie.
And you get the prairie flowers.
Oh, yeah, the prairie flowers. And I know your wife's an excellent photographer to get pictures of those flowers.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Well, we have some callers on the line. Here's Barry. Hey, Barry, thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hello. One way that people can get some confidence in hiking is joining various meetup groups. There are three that I'm aware of in Cincinnati, but I bet there are more. One is called Tri-State Hikers. Another is Dayton Hikers. And then there's another one called Ohio Valley Trailblazers.
Oh.
I took advantage of that when I was traveling once and needed to just build my confidence, and I decided to join one of those groups. And a lot of those people have tremendous amounts of experience, and it's quite helpful.
Well, that's great advice. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Barry. Sure, appreciate that. Patrick, you are a very experienced hiker. You've been doing this for a long time with your family, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes.
Have you ever joined up with a group, or is...
No, but I totally agree with him. It's a good place, one, to find like-minded people, for one. And to be honest, that's one of the motives behind our whole blog situation, is to adequately describe to people exactly what a trail is like, okay, from terrain and, length and change in altitude and all that kind of stuff, so people don't get in over their head and, they have more realistic expectation of what the experience is going to be. So I totally agree that those groups could provide a lot of safety.
Yeah. And the blog, I know we have a link to your blog on our website, wvxu.org, and it's Footpaths, right?
Footpathsblog.com.
Footpathsblog.com. Yeah, it has lots of information. Do you even get into bathrooms and that sort of thing on
yes,
the blog?
Yeah,
I thought so. Very practical.
And occasionally I'll say if there's a good craft beer place nearby.
That's a good partner with the bathrooms. Yeah. You need both those. Lots of pictures, too, that are usually taken by your wife.
Correct.
Yes, yes. Well, wonderful. Well, we also have another caller on the line. Hi, Grady. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hey, I'm hoping for someone to help me settle a debate with my wife.
Oh, this is dangerous. This is dangerous, Grady, but you're a brave man. So, please go ahead.
The difference between a hike and a walk in the woods.
Okay. I'm going to save you for last on this, Patrick, because you do this one of those two things with your wife regularly. Let's start with you, Alan. Do you think there's a difference between a hike and a walk in the woods? And if so, what do you think it is?
I have never given this thought before, but just hearing the question now, I would argue that, yes, there is. A hike is something that I usually plan for, and then I think about, like, oh, I'm going to go for a hike this weekend and, like, kind of look at where I'm going to go, where a walk in the woods is just something that comes up or is more impromptu, not as much thought goes into it. And you just, like, I need to get a little bit of nature in my life, so I'm going to go for a walk in the woods right now. So I guess my answer would be there's a little bit more planning involved with the hike versus a walk in the woods. But that is, of course, my opinion.
Sure. What do you think, Mark?
That's a funny question, but I like it. And I'll take this a little bit different way. So with my job, a lot of times I do a lot of trail planning for new trail development. So sometimes a walk in the woods involves planning and designing new trails where a trail might not exist yet. But also, you know, I think sometimes a hike can be, you know, if I'm deliberate in going for a hike, a lot of times I'll use my trekking poles and I'm planning on going a farther distance, where a walk in the woods might just be meditative. And maybe I'm going for a walk to get to the nearest bench to observe the beauty that is before me.
Hmm. Okay, Patrick, it's all on you now. What do you think?
I break it down pretty much the same. Hike, I think of being planned and more athletic. And a walk is more of a stroll and mental health.
Hmm. Okay, Grady. Okay, so who wins, you or your wife, with these answers?
I'm going to say I win, but they're different. So, thank you guys very much. I will be sure to pass this along to her tonight.
Well, thank you, and be sure to tell her that she can listen to the repeat tonight at 8 or check the audio on our website if she wants to fact check you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. We have Amy on the line. Hi, Amy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm here to tell you all about a sport called orienteering, and the sport is teaches you how to use maps and compasses. So if you're interested in hiking and want to feel more comfortable using a map, attending an orienteering event is a really good way to do it. And Cincinnati happens to have one of the most active orienteering clubs in the whole country. And we have events almost every single weekend somewhere in the greater Cincinnati area. So if anybody wants to try orienteering, you could just Google Orienteering Cincinnati, and there's an events tab on our website that will tell you where our next event is. And we can do all the training and give you all the supplies you need. And it's great for kids and old people and people walking dogs and everybody in between.
Oh, that sounds great. Patrick, are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am. And yeah. I think it's great. I think map skills are very beneficial. It takes some of the fear and uncertainty out of being on the trail for some people.
Yeah. Well, and the map itself is important because mm-hmm. your cell phone might not be connected out there. Your battery might run out. I mean, that's an important skill to have.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Amy. That was a great comment. We sure appreciate it. We also have Barb on the line. Hi, Barb. What's your question?
Hi. Well, it's not a question, it's a comment.
Okay.
On September 13th, from 11 to 4, there's going to be an event at Mount Airy Forest called Trail Fest. I think this is their third year. Part of what they'll be doing is organized hikes and to introduce people to the trails in the woods. There's going to be a lot of other activities and booths and food and beer and music and all kinds of other things going on that day, too. But it's a wonderful family event to introduce families to the trails of Mount Airy Forest.
Wow. Well, thanks, Barb. We appreciate that information. That's great information, too. Thanks so much for calling. Thanks for listening. We are going to take a quick break, and we will continue our hiking show after that. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about summer hiking for the full hour today. My guests are Indiana Department of Natural Resources Trails Manager Alan Hurst, Ohio Department of Natural Resources Statewide Trails Administrator Mark Allen, and Footpaths blogger Patrick Burns. If you have questions for our guests, or if you have comments about the hiking trails you like best, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Patrick, are federal
cuts affecting national forests and parks and trails. Do you think they're going to affect the trails that are open to hike, or what it'll be like to hike those trails?
You know, I think it's interesting. I think, you know, maintenance and upkeep of these parks are so important. I was hiking in the Red River Gorge last week, and we were noting how many trees and down, but they were, you know, appropriately cut up, and the trail was back open. And if you blindly cut budgets and don't look at the realistic maintenance, then the quality of the experience is going to go down. It'll make it less available to people who are less mobile and things along that line.
Yeah. Yeah. Not everybody can climb over some stuff that's fallen down, or it's not always safe to climb over stuff that's fallen down. Well, I know the Trump administration has also floated ideas about selling hundreds of thousands of acres of public land. Patrick, what do you think are the implications of that for national parks and conservation efforts that go, you know, all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt?
A couple things. I think the national parks themselves are probably off the block. I think it's just too emotional for people. But the problem is a lot of those national parks have a buffer zone around them of other type of wilderness areas, whether they're wilderness areas or national forest or something along that line. And so the quality of the experience may be lessened by what takes place on the outskirts of the park itself. One of the most positive things that came out of the Big Beautiful Bill debate was the sale of national public lands was taken out of the package entirely. And that was because a large number of representatives and senators did not want to see that. There's one senator, I believe, from Arizona that's still pushing for that. But I think it's going to be a bridge too far. At least I hope it is.
Okay. Well, we have another caller on the line. Hey, Scott, thanks for calling. What's your comment or question?
Hi. It's more of a suggestion. My wife and I have been hiking for 30, 40 years. We like the Ark and Edge of Appalachia. We like Red River Gorge, Hockey Hills. A suggestion I could make, though, for the novice, is that trails are really marked very well now in those kind of places. And a lot of times there's a trailhead. Some trails go in and come straight back. Other ones are loops. And I think it's beneficial to take the marked trail, follow the arrows, follow the blazes. Because typically, in a lot of hilly areas, it's going to be an easy climb.
Yeah, that sounds like good advice. What do you think, Mark? Is that what you tell people? Follow the marked trail. Don't try to figure out something on your own.
Yeah, definitely want to follow those leave no trace principles and stay on the trail to minimize our impact as we are recreating on public land. But yeah, as far as maps go, I mean, I agree. Yeah, hopefully there'll be a map at the trailhead of the place that you're visiting. If they don't have a physical map that you could take with you, take a photo of the map that's at the kiosk. That way you still have a map in your pocket. Additionally, you know, with Ohio State Parks, we have been utilizing the Outer Spatial app. That is an app that does work offline if you open the app before you go out on your adventure. That app can also help with planning, you know, your routes. We do have some suggested routes within the app for some of our facilities. But then it also helps you with planning because it has all the points of interest that you might need along your journey, such as restrooms, drinking fountains, and the like. So, yeah, great tips there.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott. I'm sorry to have cut you off. Your audio is a little bit fuzzy, so I appreciate your call, and thanks so much for that great advice. Alan, what about in Indiana? Are there typically maps at trailheads and things that people can use to really stick to the marked trail?
At least at state parks, right now we do offer property maps, and then we do make those property maps available online. So those are always a useful tool to have. Many of these trails, or at least state park trails, and then even beyond our borders, is a lot of trails will be marked, which is always helpful. And then there's also a lot of third-party apps or maps that are very useful. Things like All Trails, they'll show you the trails, that it'll have a GPS of it. And then even beyond that, they'll offer things like photos or reviews and comments about the trail, about what you can expect out there. So kind of all those tools together make a really good toolkit for making sure that you know where you're headed and what the trail is going to do.
Patrick, what do you like to use best when you're making sure you're sticking to the trail?
I use all of the above. I frequently print out a map if it's available before I go leave home. I always take a picture in case it's up to date at the trailhead as well. I've used all trails, so I've done it all.
Mm-hmm.
Some hiking areas are not as well marked as others, especially like wildlife management areas and things along that line. The properties that are run by land conservancies like Ark of Appalachia, Edge of Appalachia, and those kind of organizations, they all seem to be well marked.
Mm-hmm. Good to know. Well, Patrick, let's talk about tick exposure. How do you avoid them when they're hiking? Because it seems like there are a lot of them out there this summer.
Yeah, there are every summer, but I've been told that this summer has been particularly high on some of the places I've been hiking. Basically, what I do is I wear light-colored pants such that if they're climbing up my leg, I can see them easier. I tuck my pants into my socks to not allow them to get to my legs. And I use a DEET containing bug spray on my shoes and my ankles, as well as elsewhere in my body for the mosquitoes. So
yeah. Are you in the habit of checking for ticks after a hike to just make sure nothing slipped by you?
Usually, actually, during the hike as well. During the water break, we'll check each other's legs and stuff like that so they cannot get up under the shirt or something along that line.
Yeah. Hmm. What if one does make it past your defenses, what's the best way to remove a tick? There are so many kind of old wives' tales about that.
Basically, it's just a good set of tweezers and just pull straight off the skin. Do not twist it because that can lead to more proteins being deposited in the skin and things along that line.
Okay. Well, again, we are talking about hiking for the full hour today. If you've got questions for our guests, they've got plenty of information. We'd also love to hear your comments about the hiking trails you like best. Call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We were talking earlier about the best trails for when it's really hot out. With any luck, it will not be this hot all summer. So, Mark, are there trails around the greater Cincinnati area that you can recommend that are just your favorites in the summer, even, you know, when it's not crazy hot like this?
Yeah, Houston Woods State Park has the Cedar Falls Trail that's absolutely beautiful. It's a little bit rugged, so be prepared for that, but it's short. And it, you know, takes you to, you know, scenic view of Cedar Falls. Across the street, though, you have a little bit more of an easier hike with the Haiku Trail. It's an interesting trail, kind of like our storybook trails that we have at some of our state parks. But we worked with a group of school kids that wrote haikus. And then along the trail, you could read these short haikus as you enjoy that very flat but wooded hike along sycamore trees that are along the lake there.
Hmm. Alan, what about in Indiana? Are there places that are good in the summer when it's not so incredibly hot?
I will promote one of my favorite trails in Indiana. It is, to be fair, about 100 miles away from Cincinnati, but absolutely worth it for the more athletic and prepared hikers and backpackers, the Knobstone Trail. That is Indiana's longest backpacking trail, and it can be anywhere from 45 to 60 miles. But there are a lot of trailheads, so you can do a little section or a day hike there. But that goes through Jackson Washington State Forest, Clark State Forest, Deem Lake State Recreation Area. It's just a lot of ridge walking, a lot of great views, and it does have the nickname of the Mini Appalachian Trail. So it is, there's a lot of ups and downs, so it is a rugged trail. So I do recommend being in shape for it. But it is a fantastic trail to hike and get out on. Great things to see, great views, and definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, Patrick, I know it's hard to pick favorites because you hike all over the place, but do you have a favorite in Kentucky that you like for the summer?
Well, there's one called Quiet Trails. It's a state nature preserve. Also, it's down towards Cynthiana area. And it's a little bit of a hilly hike, but you hike down to the headwaters or the beginning of the Licking River. And so it's a good place if you can get it, you know, get in the water and look around and look under rocks and stuff like that. I think it'd be a great place to take kids, maybe kids six and older, because of the hill mainly. But that's an outstanding one.
Yeah. Well, we got an email from Jeff who writes, shout out to Patrick. His writing combined with his wife's photography are professionally done and packed full of scientific details. As a past mountaineer and rock climbing guide, I'll offer a tip regarding taking water on hikes during hot days. Take Nalgene bottles, fill them half with water, and drop it in your freezer the night before. Before the hike, remove the bottles and finish filling the bottle with fresh water. The ice will keep the water cold for about 4 to 6 hours. It will condensate. A Nalgene bottle is easy to pack and a better solution than disposable plastic bottles. Take at least 2 liters and remember to hydrate before starting your hike. You were nodding in agreement to that. Is that something you all have done, Patrick?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we've got another caller on the line. I don't know if this is the same Jeff, but we have a Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, I live in Sims Township, and my dog and my granddogs love off-leash hiking. I know we do. One of our favorites is Redbird Trail in Indian Hill, but I was wondering if maybe your guests maybe have some other suggestions for trails that allow off-leash hiking.
Mm, that's a great question. I'll start with you, Alan. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do not know any specific trails that allow off-leash hiking, but it's a little weird to be promoting a third-party thing, but All Trails usually does a good job of letting you know if the trails do allow that or not. So that is a useful resource for finding those types of trails.
Yeah. What about you, Mark? Are there specific off-trails hiking opportunities in Ohio?
Yeah, so ODNR is we have 4 land managing divisions, parks and watercraft being one of those, and all of our park facilities require the dogs to be on leash. If you're on a DNAP property, so that's Department of Natural Areas and Preserves, they do not allow pets, but our wildlife facilities. Dogs must be under control, and that's for hunting purposes. So that would mean that your dog can be off leash, but must be under like voice control for that reason. So I would suggest possibly looking at some of ODNR's wildlife areas for off leash.
Mark, you mentioned under control. What is appropriate hiking etiquette with dogs? I know there are a lot of friendly dogs. They might run up to people who are other people on the trail, but other people on the trail might not be comfortable with dogs for whatever reason. Is there hiking etiquette you can recommend?
Yeah, I mean, this is really a tough topic because, I'm a dog lover. I own a dog and everybody thinks their dog is, well-behaved. But a dog off leash, you really, truly don't have control over. So there's a lot of risk involved. And even if you do have, a well-behaved dog, other people that you might encounter might not feel comfortable with dogs. So it's just important to recognize that the outdoor space is for everybody, and we want to make sure that everybody feels welcome and invited. And removing barriers and obstacles is important. And sometimes, being respectful of unknown biases that people might have, like that if they're afraid of dogs, might make them feel uncomfortable at certain facilities if that's the path that you want to take.
Yeah. Patrick, are you familiar with any dog-friendly, off-leash dog-friendly spots around here?
Yes, I have 2 comments on this. Okay. One, I am a past victim of a dog bite.
Oh, goodness.
And from behind, and so I get very anxious when I do meet an unleashed dog. But I would say I would agree with the comment that the wildlife management areas generally have no restrictions on dogs, at least in Kentucky. One of my favorite hikes is called Lloyd Woods. It's at the Curtis Gates Lloyd Wildlife Management Area in Crittenden, Kentucky. So it's about 25 miles south of here. Excellent. It's an old growth forest and about mile and a half trail, something like that. And so that's a good place someone could go.
Mm-hmm. And they allow dogs off leash to hike?
Okay. Because again, it's a hunting facility as well.
Gotcha.
A different part of the property has hunting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks so much, Jeff. I hope that helps, and enjoy the trails with your dog and your grand dogs. I love that you called them your grand dogs because I have grand kittens. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Patrick, I'm going to come back to you with another bummer of a question. That's poison ivy, because I know I am highly allergic to it. A lot of people are. What are your best tips for avoiding it? I honestly can never remember that rhyme that is supposed to be my key to avoiding poison ivy.
Well, again, I think the main thing is learning how to identify it, okay? And now is a good time to go out on a trail and look around and see if you can identify it. Not to push my own website, but there is an article on there. It's one of the ones that's read most often. It's read every day by somebody, and it's identifying poison ivy. And so the other important thing about poison ivy is you can also get that in the winter, because not just the leaves have the oil in it that causes the problem, but the vines can. So if you're a gardener and you're pulling out vines in November, you could get poison ivy. If you're carrying firewood that has vines on it, it could be poison ivy vines, and you could get poison ivy. So the other important thing is I'm not very sensitive to poison ivy. Whenever I'm finished gardening for the day or whatever, I'll immediately wash up. The soap and water destroys that oil that causes the problem. And so as long as you get to that in the first hour or two after you're done with your exposure, it will not be a problem.
Yeah. Should you wash off like your hiking boots or your poles or anything that might have come into contact with it?
I have never done that, and mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessary. Now, your pets can bring you poison ivy if they go rolling through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's just a risk.
Yeah. Yep, that's the risk of loving a pet who likes to roll in stuff. And is the rhyme, is it supposed to be Leaves of Three, Let It Be?
Leaves of Three, Let It Be. It's a little little inaccurate in that it's one leaf with three leaflets, but I go over that in my article. There's only a few things that it truly can be confused with. Box elder trees have a similar leaf, but it comes off differently, and something called fragrant sumac. And other than that, it's pretty easy to tell them apart.
Okay, and I'm sure you've got pictures.
I got
blog
pictures.
Post too. Mm-hmm. Plenty of pictures. Well, we are going to take another quick break. We'll be back to wrap up our summer hiking show. If you've got questions or comments, now is the time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're wrapping up our summer hiking show. My guests are Ohio Department of Natural Resources Statewide Trails Administrator Mark Allen, Indiana Department of Natural Resources Trails Manager Alan Hurst, and Footpaths blogger Patrick Burns. If you have questions for them or comments about summer hiking, don't wait. Call now, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. You know, Mark, earlier in the show, you mentioned when we got that question about the difference between a walk in the woods and a hike, you mentioned that your job requires you to walk in the woods sometimes to find a new potential trail. Are there any new exciting trails that have opened up in Ohio that you can tell our listeners about?
Yeah, so I have several projects under contract right now across the state. A couple of them are mountain bike trails, but they also offer hiking opportunities. We have a 10-mile mountain bike trail expansion that is going on at West Branch State Park. That's near Ravenna, Ohio. Additionally, we have a 4 miles of adaptive mountain bike trail. So that's a mountain bike trail that's specifically designed for folks that use hand cycles. But it also, again, will allow hiking and dog walking on that trail. That's at Alum Creek State Park on the eastern side near the intersection of Cheshire and Africa Road. And we have a large project that's under construction, but it's not expected to be done until the end of 2026. It's 26 miles of new hiking trail at Appalachian Hills Wildlife Area. And that's going to connect to 13 miles of the existing Buckeye Trail that runs through Appalachian Hills Wildlife Area. And that new backpacking trail is going to connect to existing camping opportunities to ideally create a destination backpacking experience in that part of the state. But again, I referenced the trail that was built at Stone Lick State Park over the last year with our AmeriCorps crew. It's the Blue Heron Trail. It's a 2-mile hike from the dam just past the boat ramp to another parking lot. So you could start on either end. It's a linear trail. So it would be about a 4-mile round trip out and back. So we have opportunities for all different skill levels. And, you know, there are some new trails that are being developed with our partners at Great Parks of Hamilton County. I know that they are developing a little over 1 mile natural surface trail that'll start at the Avoca Trailhead along the Little Miami Scenic River.
Mark, you just mentioned a mountain bike trail. Are people allowed to ride mountain bikes on trails that aren't specifically designated for mountain bikes?
No. So, and that's the thing we try to communicate with our new maps and trail signage that we're trying to roll out. We have trails that are designated for mountain biking. We have trails that are designated for equestrian use. And then we have trails that are specifically designated for hiking. But hikers also have the ability to utilize our mountain bike trails and our equestrian trails.
Okay. Well, that's good information. Alan, how about new trails in Indiana? Are there any new trails that have opened up recently or that will be opening up that people should check out?
So Indiana right now is winding down its Next Level Trails program, which provided $180 million for trails around the state. So this started in 2018. That has funded a total of 89 projects throughout the states and is going to put 238 miles of trail on the ground. Near Cincinnati, we did get some new mountain biking trails at Versailles State Park, which is about 50 miles away from Cincinnati. Right across the river in Aurora, Indiana, there is a bike pedestrian trail that's going to kind of tie into the Dearborn trails there along the Ohio River. The biggest project that came from Next Level Trails is actually a 62.3 mile abandoned railroad corridor that was purchased, an old CSX line. That's going to be running a trail from New Albany outside of Louisville up to near Bedford. So we bought the corridor, and then certain sections throughout that corridor are being built with this money. I believe this phase one of construction will get 25 miles of trail down. To finish off the corridor will take money from other sources, but we're really looking forward to that corridor come together and make a real destination trail for that area.
Patrick, are there new trails that you've explored recently or that you're looking to explore in Kentucky or anywhere around here?
In Kentucky, before the summer's end, we're going to go down to West Six Brewery, has a farm that has bike trails and hiking trails. So we have never explored that. So those are relatively new. They're on a tributary to the Kentucky River. So that's going to be down near Frankfort. So it's about 60 miles away, or maybe a little more than that.
Yeah, I see a pattern here with breweries and hiking.
That's a hobby.
Yeah, there you go. It's two. It's like the Reese cup of hobbies. Two great tastes that taste great together. Well, that sounds great. So one of the things I read in preparing for this was that too many people, when they're going hiking, focus on these uncommon, scary threats of hiking, like bears or poisonous snakes, without spending enough time worrying about these dull, more common dangers of hiking, like blisters or getting overheated in the summer. What do you think, Patrick? Do people worry about the wrong stuff sometimes when they're thinking about hiking?
I think they have to respect bears are obviously getting a little more common. They're coming at us both from the south and the east. So I think that you have to be realistic about that and have a plan. What would you do if you come in contact with one? So I think you have to respect the wildlife as well. But I do think you need the appropriate garments, the footwear, and all that, so that you don't. So that it's not a bad experience, so that you're going to be excited to go back out into the woods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Mark? Do people sometimes stress about the wrong things?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is what they're not worried about, they should be. And Patrick mentioned it, is footwear. Common accident is slips, trips, and falls. And if you're on, just a regular trail that could be, you're left stranded, even a half mile could be, how do I get out? How do first responders get to me? So just being prepared with proper footwear and hydration goes a long way. And then also just planning ahead what distance that you're comfortable hiking, and then, having the map, having the route, so that you're well prepared. It's important to keep in mind some of the things that we've talked about, like poison ivy and ticks. But really, it's those fundamental things that get most people in trouble.
What about anything you want to add, Alan, about what's reasonable to prepare for and what you maybe shouldn't worry so much about?
I would mirror a lot of the comments already said, that like big things of being prepared, planning, and knowing yourself, know how many miles that you can comfortably hike before you start to struggle or get it over your head. Just kind of knowing those aspects of it. As far as the things that the less common things that people worry about, I just say, because that is more interesting news, that gets trumpeted a little bit louder than the things that you should be spending most of your time planning and preparing for.
Yeah. We got an email from George about an outdoor drinking straw or other water source ideas. He said, is there anything I should know about those other than carrying it in all my water? Are these outdoor drinking straws, Patrick, the kinds of things that can kind of filtrate water or make them clean? Familiar with them? Mark, are you familiar with those?
Yeah. So when I do like some long distance bike packing adventures, I always carry, it's like a Sawyer squeeze, or they have a Life straw, and I've never had to use it. I typically try to refill at potable drinking water sources, but it's one of those things, if I'm on a long kind of expedition type of adventure, you want to prepare yourself with, you know, worst case situations. For your typical walk in like a metro park or even a state park, you probably don't need to carry one of those with you, unless you're doing something like going, you know, for a backpacking trip, say at like Shawnee State Park. You want to be prepared for the situations that you are gonna more probably come to. So,
mm-hmm. Alan, do you want to add anything about that? Is there anything people should know about those fancy straws other than bringing them if you're going on someplace where you might not have those potable water sources?
Yeah. As Mark said, for day trips, these are less necessary, but for backpacking trips, and certainly when I did the Appalachian Trail, I use also a Sawyer squeeze. It's just a filtration thing that ties onto the end of the water bottle. They absolutely work, and they are very handy to have. They're lightweight, so it allows you to more safely drink from creeks or rivers that you may pass. So you can't always carry all the water with you or cache it ahead. So it's a good alternative to just keep one of these on you. They're fairly lightweight and they're versatile.
Okay, great. Okay, Patrick, so do you use hiking poles? Is that something that you are pro or con?
I use a walking stick.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's old school.
Old school. Is it a stick you found or?
No, it was purchased years ago. And,
gotcha.
And, you know, but I use it, like in the gorge, it was very helpful getting about in the terrain changes in the gorge and things like that. I also use it just to push poison ivy out of the way if it's in my way, or briars or anything like that.
Yeah. Alan, is that something that you use or recommend? What do you think about hiking poles?
I'm a huge proponent of hiking poles. I always use them if I have a backpack or a significant day pack on, or if I'm dealing with a lot of elevation. For smaller day hikes, or if there's not going to be a lot of elevation change, I may not pack them or use them, but I definitely do recommend them. They help out a lot and just kind of share the load throughout your body. So it gets your arms involved in a mostly leg heavy activity.
Yeah. What about you, Mark? Are you pro pole?
Honestly, it's one of those things. I thought it was the goofiest thing ever. Didn't understand like why you needed special pants, special poles, special boots to go hiking. And after the first time I used them, it was a game changer. I typically use them on any hike over 3 miles long. Like Alan said, it engages more of your body. It definitely helps with stabilization on uneven ground. It changes it. It's really hard to explain it, but I use collapsible trekking poles. So I have one in each hand. And it really helps propel you forward. But also, like when you're climbing a steep hill, you could really get some leverage. And also when you're descending steep terrain, it gives you more stability. And then also, sometimes when you're hiking long distances, your fingers start to swell from the blood flow that just kind of gets stuck at the bottom of as your hands dangle. And I find that using trekking poles, at least for me, really keeps the blood flowing, and I don't have the swelling in my fingers that I used to have when I would do longer hikes.
Okay, so tip out there, if you think it looks goofy, if Mark is saying, put away your biases there, and they could be really helpful. Patrick, let's talk about some of the places you've hiked in Northern Kentucky in recent months. I saw on your blog that a few months ago you went to Conservancy Park in Burlington. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, that's it's a rehabbed old gravel mine that was neglected for two decades, I believe. And they've turned it into a birding hotspot. It's got some water and it's on migratory routes. So it's enjoyable short hike, maybe a mile and a half, something like that, 2 miles. But when you just need a quick fix, you don't want to drive 50 miles, it really works for us.
Yeah. Are there any, what are your quick fix spots, Alan, for, I don't know if you have a quick fix recommendation for this neck of the woods?
Unfortunately, I'm based out of Indianapolis, so all my quick fixes are fairly close by to me, so I'm not as versed around there. But again, I'll just point to Brookville Lake being a close spot that has a lot of hiking options, from short wooded hikes to that has the Adena Trace Loop, which is a 24-mile backpacking loop.
That makes sense. Mark, you have any quick fix recommendations?
Yeah, I'm, again, based out of Columbus. I don't visit the Cincinnati region as often as I'd like. But again, using the digital resources that are out there to help plan is a great tool to, you know, find new hikes close to you.
Yeah. Patrick, I know you've got on your website, I think you've got delineations for kind of beginners and intermediate hikes, advanced, kind of some accessibility type hikes.
Yeah.
What are the things you look for when you're trying to determine who can handle what kind of hike?
Basically, for me, I have a section for all persons trails, and that means basically it is paved in one way or another. So someone with a wheelchair could push somebody on it, a walker, whatever. And then if it's gravel, then we just go easy, moderate, difficult kind of ranking. But I find that, or I found a lot of patients, or a lot, I shouldn't say patients now, a lot of people were reading my blog but weren't going hiking because they felt like they couldn't do it. And so they actually asked us to find some trails they could do, and that's why we started that part of it.
That's great. Well, I have been talking with Footpaths blogger Patrick Burns, Indiana Department of Natural Resources Trails Manager Alan Hurst, and Ohio Department of Natural Resources Statewide Trails Administrator Mark Allen. Thank you all so much for your time today and for all this great information.
Thank you.
You've been listening.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.